Perhaps he'd find it stimulating if I talked as much as that, she said.
We shouldn't, I told her.
Actually, I had thought Mrs. Cotton was very stimulating myself, but had no intention of being so tactless as to say so. I could hear Rose playing the piano. I closed the kitchen door and said, "What did you think of our manner today?" At least it was quieter, though she was still making eyes. But anyway, doesn't matter now. I looked at her in astonishment, and she went on, "Simon Cotton's attracted, really attracted. Couldn't you see? Once that happens, a girl can be as silly as she likes. The man'll probably think the silliness is fetching."
"Is Neil attracted too?"
"I doubt it," said Topaz. "I've an idea that Neil sees through her. I saw him give her a very shrewd look. Oh, how are we going to dress her, Cassandra? There's a chance for her with Simon, really there is. I know the signs." I had a sudden picture of Simon's face, pale above the beard. "But would you really like her to marry him, Topaz?" I asked.
"I'd like her to get the chance," said Topaz firmly.
Miss Marcy arrived then with a book for Father. We told her about the problem of Rose's dress.
"It should be pink," she said. "A crinoline effect. There's the very thing here in this week's Home Chat."
She dived into her satchel for it. "Oh, dear, that would be perfect for her," sighed Topaz. Miss Marcy blushed and blinked her eyes, then said,
"Could you make it, Mrs. Mortmain? If dear Rose allowed me to give her the material?"
"I'll allow you," said Topaz. "I feel justified."
"Perhaps we could offer Miss Marcy something of Aunt Millicent's as a small return," I suggested.
They went off to the dining room, where the clothes were spread out, while I stayed to get Stephen his tea. He asked how I liked the two Cottons, now I knew them better.
"Oh, I don't know Simon at all. He talked to Rose most of the time, but Neil's very nice."
"Would you call him handsome?"
I said I hardly thought so. "Not really handsome, not the way you are, Stephen."
I spoke without thinking. We all of us take his good looks for granted, but he blushed so much that I wished I hadn't said it.
"You see, you have classical features," I explained in a matter-of-fact voice.
"Seems a waste when I'm not a gentleman." He grinned, a little sarcastic sort of grin.
"Oh, don't talk like that," I said quickly. "Gentlemen are men who behave like gentlemen, and you certainly do."
He shook his head. "You can only be a gentleman if you're born one, Miss Cassandra."
"Stephen, that's old-fashioned nonsense," I said. "Really it is. And by the way, will you please stop calling me Miss Cassandra?"
He looked astonished. Then he said, "Yes, I see. It should be Miss Mortmain. Now you're grown up enough for dinner parties."
"It certainly shouldn't," I said. "I mean, you must call me Cassandra, without the Miss. You're one of the family. It's absurd you should ever have called me Miss. Who told you to?"
"My mother. She set a lot of store by it," he said.
"Would I call Miss Rose just Rose?" he asked.
I wasn't sure how Rose would feel about it, so I said, "Oh, why worry about Rose? This is between you and me."
"I couldn't call her Miss and not you," he said firmly. "It'd be setting her above you."
I said I would talk to Rose about it, then asked him to pass his cup for more tea. I was getting a bit embarrassed by the subject. He stirred his second cup for a long time, then said, "Did you mean that about gentlemen being men who behave like gentlemen?"
"Of course I did, Stephen."
I was so anxious to make him believe me that I leaned towards him across the table. He looked at me, right into my eyes. That queer, veiled expression in his, that I fear I used to call his daft look, was suddenly not there. There seemed to be a light in them, and yet I have never seen them look so dark. And they were so direct that it was more like being touched than being looked at. It only lasted a second, but for that second he was quite a different person. Much more interesting, even a little bit exciting.